This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan, and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koi Gig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you to look back on a packed weekend of action in the WSL as the league returned. I'm joined, as ever, to look back on all that action by Karen Duggan and Scarlett Heron. How are we, guys?
Good. It's good to be back talking about the WSL.
Yeah, it's nice to have the league back. Before we dive into that, though, I do want to touch on the other big sporting event of the weekend, which was Katie Taylor's fight in Croke Park, which looked absolutely incredible. I personally had to go for a mental health walk at the end of it because it was just so incredible seeing, you know, over 80,000 people turn up in Croke Park, which obviously has so many fond memories for so many people and has such cultural significance in Ireland. Did you guys enjoy the fight, or were you stressed like me for most of it?
All my stress dissipated once Westlife came on. I was just like, this is amazing. Everything about this event is amazing. But yeah, just so incredible to see a crowd so excited, and just the talk all of the week all being around a female athlete and words being like greatest ever, and, you know, comparing it to Ali and the hype that has gone around it and everything that Katie Taylor has brought to our island, not just for women's sport, but as a sports person in general. I don't know anyone who's so universally liked and revered for not only the athlete she is, but the person that she is. And I think there's so much of that that she's given to us, and there's so much that future athletes and people in general can take from that. So I feel like she deserved everything that went around that event, and the legacy of that will continue for a long time. She's already sparked so many movements, but I think even this again will kind of snowball, hopefully, more interest into women's sport as well, and what they can do for this country.
100%. And I think you're right. The universally liked thing, I can't even really think of a sporting person even outside of Ireland that everyone has such, you know, universal like for. And I think, you know, part of that is maybe potentially that she has been living outside of Ireland for a while as well, and maybe doesn't have the, because of the way boxing works as a sport, you know, you don't have the week in, week out eyes and attention on you. But even still, everything that she achieved, I will second your claim about Westlife. That was probably one of the best parts of the evening for me too. I felt like a good Sligo representation in there is always a good thing. Scarlett, what about you? Did you get a chance to watch it over in Scotland?
Yeah, no, it was great. And I think just to, I suppose, echo what you've already said, like, I think it was a great testament to, and a great, I suppose, showing of what is like probably the greatest athlete that's ever come out of our island. I don't think there'll be many qualms about that. I think she'll go down as, you know, one of the greats, not just in her sport, but even just of what she done for women in sport in Ireland and worldwide. Like the stories of her, you know, acting as a boy to be able to get fights when she was only young, and her first time in a gym being the only girl there. I think she has paved the way now for women in boxing, and is, I suppose, given an opportunity for women that they mightn't have had at the stage without her. So, yeah, I think she'll always be known as a legend around here and worldwide as well. I think it's very rare that we have a female athlete that's not in a team sport that is known so worldwide, and is so, as we've talked about already, you know, so respected universally as well. So I think it was a great night for her, and one that is obviously so well deserved. And I think it was great that she got her swan song in the end.
Yeah, and especially the fact that she did win the fight and it was a comfortable fight. You know, it wasn't a case of maybe some other decisions where maybe she's a bit more of a home favorite. So it has gone her way. I think that was really, really important for the legacy as well. So that the whole event actually felt like a proper thing. It wasn't just a, we're all just here to turn up for Katie Taylor. We're also here to watch a really good fight. Hopefully it's not the last time we see something like that, but very happy that it is the first time that we've seen it and that now that benchmarker has been set. And speaking of giving opportunities to women and setting benchmarkers, I feel like it's a great way to go into our first match of the weekend, which was London City Lionesses versus Manchester United, which happened on Friday. And I think I was reflecting on it afterwards, and I know during the match I was a bit like, oh, Manchester United are maybe a bit worse than I expected them to be. But then on reflection, I was like, actually, do you know what? I think this is actually what I thought, the level I thought these two sides would be at heading into this first game.
Yeah, I agree. As a Man United fan, I was more looking forward to watching London City Lionesses. Like, I'm intrigued as to see what Eva Olad can do at Man United, but like Scarlett alluded to in previous podcasts, it's definitely going to be a process. And Letizia after the match was like, even mentioned that it is going to be a process. And I was on the Instagram today and they just had a snippet of a podcast they're doing, and again they're speaking about how Eva Olad did so much bringing a team from amateur to professional and the success that she brought them in Scotland, and using that model is not music to a Man United fan's ears because it took so long for them to enter into the professional realms. And then they did achieve so much with so little backing in terms of FA Cup, Champions League qualification. And now it's like right in front of our eyes, accepting that everything is taking a step back, not in terms of the manager, so we don't know enough about her, but just in terms of the support and everything that goes with it. So obviously that's a process and United fans are going to have to be patient. But in terms of the match, they weren't able to cope. I think they were... Eva Olad obviously wants them to play a possession-based style of football, but it's like until the second half, they certainly lacked the confidence to do that. And I don't know where that comes from, if it's just because of the amount of change or if it's because there's this almost acceptance that they're not going to be competing at the highest level. And maybe London City are that team that will be. I'm not really sure, like it's too early to tell, but that first half gave cause for concern. Second half was a bit better. But yeah, like you say, are we wrongfully accepting that this is just the level that they're at?
Yeah, well,
Sorry, Scarlett, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's disappointing that I suppose the lack of attacking cohesion that they did have on Friday night, whereas that is what they're going to be sort of honing in on. And like you listen to Eva Olad before and after the game and talking about playing with that confidence and bravery and, you know, wanting to play a fluid style of attack and play. And yeah, I think you're a million miles away from that, from Friday night's performance. But I think in fairness to her, like she's had 3 weeks to come in and to try, I suppose, implement this new style of play that these players mightn't have played before. So I think it is a difficult one, but I think the story of the game is more so of, you know, London City and Michelle Kang and the interviews before the game and, you know, the Nike sponsorship and just everything around Boutteas and all the new signings coming in. And obviously them selling out the Bromley Stadium as well. So I think it was probably a result that we did expect, as you said, Kathleen. But I think United do have an awful lot of work to do. But I think it's extremely difficult when... I know she is being backed by the club, but she's not getting given anything to work with, really. You know, they're more outgoings than ingoings. And last year we talked about the lack of depth. So they've actually even less players now available to them. So I think it'll be very difficult to, in this season anyway, to improve a whole lot on what we saw.
What sort of ceiling then? I know it's only one game in, so like it's really hard to make a judgment on the whole season, but considering they haven't really brought in a lot of players, it doesn't look like they're planning on bringing on a lot of players. Like, what's an acceptable ceiling for Eva Olad in her first season? Say, let's not even go full season, let's go like at Christmas. Like, what's an acceptable place for this Manchester United team to be in, considering that much hasn't changed?
I think sixth would be overachieving. But I think realistically, where they are now is ninth, because that middle pack is always very, very close. It's very hard to call that middle pack. I think they'll pull away from the bottom based on what I've seen from some of the promoted teams. I don't think it's catastrophic, the road ahead of them. I think that the manager will do a good job with them in time. Christmas might be a bit soon. I think end of season things might start to click and might see some reinforcements. But chasing pack at best, I would say.
And Scarlett, what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I'd agree. I was going to say fifth or sixth. It just depends really on what other teams can step up. I know Brighton, obviously, we've spoken about them a lot, but with the change of management, will that click? There's a lot of questions, but I think it will depend on how strong the teams around that middle pack will be. I would say London City will obviously finish ahead of them, I would assume. And then you have the leading three, and then Spurs, the hot topic.
That's what I was doing when I was counting down to six. I was like,
oh, Spurs. Okay. Yeah, you had Spurs in third, I hope. I think fifth or sixth is around, I would say, where they'll be looking at maybe. I think to try challenge for Europe this year, I think is just a massive, massive step too far, considering that, you know, they couldn't get it last year when they had, I suppose, I know it was the end of Mark Skinner's reign, but again, you have more players in. So, yeah, I think they'll struggle to break that fifth place barrier.
Mm. And then for London City Lionesses, obviously the big question going into the season was, okay, they've made all these big signings, but can Master actually get them to gel and to, you know, play as a cohesive unit? It's great to have someone like Alexia Putellas on your team, obviously, but, you know, that it is only one player in a whole squad. So from what you saw over the weekend, do you think that this is a squad that will be able to gel? Obviously, need to give them a bit of time as well. We don't expect everything to go smoothly as of the first match.
I think they have enough experience to gel quickly enough. I thought there was a couple of outstanding performances. I thought Van de Donk and her relief after the game of, you know, just being able to play a full 90 minutes and show what she could do. You know, she's a hugely experienced player. Cascarino beside her, she was causing all sorts of trouble. And like, she's 29, you know, Van de Donk is in her 30s, Putellas is 30s. So they have enough leadership there and they have enough squad depth to make it click quickly enough. I'd imagine they put in a lot of work in the preseason trips away, just in terms of getting to know each other and stuff like that, off the pitch and creating kind of a good atmosphere in the dressing room. That could be the hardest part, and just the adjustment of people's culture and stuff. But evidence showed, like, I thought they pressed really, really well. I thought that there was, you know, moments in the game where you're like, got quite excited about what they were doing. So I'm excited to see how far they can go in terms of pushing. I still don't think that they're going to be City Chelsea level straight away, but certainly knocking on the door in the way that Man United were, but with a much higher ceiling to work towards.
Yeah,
I think they seem very well set up. Like you mentioned, their press there, I think United really, really struggled with it, especially in that first half. And then, like, you have the players with the experience there, you know, even Mappy Leon coming in at centre half, and then you still have Mary Earps possibly to challenge Lette too. So, I think even from set plays, you can see how well they've worked and how much they have worked on them, because United really, really struggled. You see that for the Van de Donk goal, but a number of times throughout the game, you know, the set play has really, really hurt United. So I think there's been a lot of work put in there, and obviously a really well structured setup. So I think when you have that and you have a good base, especially in that back line, then you can work on the forward line. Then I think they just have such electric players then in that forward line that there's not much you can even coach there, because there is so much quality. You just say, you know, you guys figure it out, you go have fun, you know, go enjoy the ball and go, you know, create chances and create opportunities for us to score, because you know, the quality that is there is frightening. So I don't think they'll have any issues on the front line of the pitch anyway.
One team that did have a few issues on the front line of the pitch were, well, they technically did it. They had enough possession to do well. They just couldn't convert enough of the opportunities. And that was Chelsea against Aston Villa. In the 12 times they had played before this game, Aston Villa had lost every single time, failed to take away a point. And then on Saturday, they managed to get a last minute goal and see off a 1-1 draw. I think Chelsea had something like close to 80% possession for the majority of the game, lots and lots of opportunities for goals, and yet they couldn't manage to score. And Scarlett, it's something that we've seen quite a lot with Chelsea, with this Chelsea side under Sonia Baumpastor. And, you know, I think we've given different reasons for it over the time, that she was working with a Hayes team, that Hayes was able to, you know, get the goals basically when they really needed them, no matter how poorly the game seemed to be going for them in the first place. And it's a skill that Baumpastor hasn't really seemed to master quite yet. And now she has less of the excuse of this being a Hayes team, because we said, even when we did our transfer special, you know, this is very much her team now.
Yeah, and I think you probably don't have that like out and out goal scorer, like you don't have a Bunny Shaw. I think that's probably why they work so hard to try sign her. Like you lose the likes of Sam Kerr. I know she's not been at her best for the last maybe couple of years of injury, but you know, when she was firing, she was hitting maybe 20 goals a season, and that is so important to have someone who can step up and score you maybe a goal a game or a goal every two games. And they do have the talent across the pitch, like you see that with Lauren James and her goal. But I think you struggle as a team when you're trying to, maybe a player will pitch in with 5 goals a year, 4 goals a year, maybe 7 goals a year if you're a winger. But I think it's so important to have that focal point where you can count on them to get even 15 goals, 20 goals a year, just to, you know, it's to get numbers on that board. And it's what Chelsea really struggled with at the weekend. And I think Villa, like, I was unsure of how Villa would do, and I think we might have spoke about them when we were talking about maybe first manager to be sacked in Araujo. But I mean, they were quite well set up. I think Katie McCabe spoke about it after and said, you know, they were defending for the majority of the game, but and then obviously got a very, very lucky goal near the end. But like, you have a completely new team there. You've 9 new players, I think, within that sort of team that played at the weekend. So I think it's testament to them as well of how they set up and frustrated Chelsea. You get a bit of luck there at the end too, but I mean, I think they were well deserved with the draw. I don't think Chelsea created enough or were cohesive enough to get the 3 points. So yeah, I think without that focal point up front, they might struggle a bit.
Yeah, like it was... Karen, you have thoughts?
They were so good. I actually thought Chelsea were so good. Like, it's... Yeah.
Lauren James was brilliant.
Lauren James was brilliant. Like, they created so many chances, like Carpenter getting forward. Some of the wide play was really, really good. And the keeper had an Okuma on her debut. She had an absolute stormer. Like, another day, another keeper. It's 5-6. I think the most disappointing part was just how, like, unreactive they were to the Villa goal. I know sometimes maybe that happens when you've been peppering the opposition. You're not expecting them to do much when they get up the pitch. That they had, Villa had very little say in this game at all. So I think Chelsea would be absolutely kicking themselves. But I didn't see enough to say that there's cause for concern there. Obviously, the top teams don't lose many points, and it can be detrimental. But I don't think Baumpastor will be like ripping up the script completely after that. I really rate Beaver Jones. Again, I think that she's 23 now. She's going to start coming into her own as well, and potentially making that position her own. And having the competition from Mallard will keep a fire under her. And Mallard, we know, is a good goal scorer as well to come in there. So I think this is just the definition of a smash and grab point from Villa. I didn't have much to say about Villa, to be honest.
I think the main thing that I kind of noticed with them that you've already pointed out there was Okuma, and how well that went down as a debut. You know, it's very, very rare that you see, especially for a goalkeeper, you know, coming in against the champions. I mean, I suppose you could say Katie Keane did something kind of similar last season whenever she came in because of an injury to the first choice keeper. But it's rare to see someone coming into the league and having that sort of confidence and to do it repetitively as well. You know, I think I read a stat somewhere that they had something ridiculous, like 50, over, nearly 60 touches in the box compared to like five up the other end, you know. So it very much was a case of being constantly under pressure. You know, it wasn't a case that a lot of that, a lot of the play was happening around the middle of the pitch or whatever. It was very much happening right on her doorstep. So yeah, I thought that was really impressive. It's also great.
It's certainly a game that Villa would have lost last season. So in terms of picking the positives, Villa had such a poor start to last season and they really struggled to recover from it. So to go out in your first game against Chelsea and be able to like weather the storm, I think, and realizing the value of just the defensive stability first and foremost. Sometimes I think they just tried to play and they weren't really good enough to do that. So I think that a game like that kind of reinforces, okay, get the basics right at the back and then we'll, anything can happen. Like Maritz scoring against her old club, she'd obviously be delighted with that one as well. And for Villa, not so much in terms of style of play or anything like that, but like positivity in understanding their limitations and playing to their strengths. This was a perfect game for them.
Yep. And also comes the day after that Anna Patton was named team captain. So that's another bonus from the Irish side of things in terms of getting players developing their leadership skills. Obviously you can't write Chelsea off after one game, as will be the asterisk beside literally anyone that we say does badly or does well. I suppose they just maybe expected a little bit more from them and maybe that they had ironed out a few more of the issues that dogged them last season and haven't seen that yet, but there's still a lot of games to come. Okay, we will look at Arsenal versus Brighton next up. And for me, this kind of very much felt like a game for the newbies that came into the squad and their performances. And, you know, sometimes you don't always see that from new signings. But it very much was that game, I think, even if the result itself looks a little bit too close for comfort.
Yeah, I think in terms of what every Arsenal fan wanted to see, would Georgia Stanway settle in quickly? And to be fair, she was probably player of the match. I'd say her heat map was through the roof. And that's the energy they need her to bring to the midfield. It saw Little getting forward quite a lot, which, you know, is positive for her. I feel like she has the vision that other people on the pitch just don't have. So if she's allowed to kind of wander and not be expected to do as much defensively, I think that'll benefit them in terms of chance creation. But Baum coming in, you know, first game, she's what, like 19 years of age. She's only got one proper big season under her belt in Germany. And the confidence she had, the directness, you know, just for the goal, she took her player on, she smacked home the finish. But not even that, it was right from the get-go. She was so positive on the ball. And she has a real presence for a 19-year-old, you know, very, very comfortable, very strong, able to hold her own coming off the wing. She's got height as well. Like she's really someone I'm now really looking forward to seeing how she does this season. And it could turn out as one of those just signings that, like a bunny show for City, if things go well for her at Arsenal, because based on her first performance and the fact that she's so, so young and she does that in her first WSL game, it looks like the sky's the limit. I hope we're not building her up too much. But it looks like she's staked a claim for a place in the starting lineup straight away, which is hugely impressive in itself.
Yeah, Scarlett, Karen mentioned there the mid field and what Georgia Stanway has brought to it. I think I saw her stats for the game and basically she was top for practically everything she did, or else joint top. But also I like the knock-on effect that it's had on the players around her, because it feels like it's released some of the more creative players to fulfill that role rather than maybe having to do some of the hard work around the midfield of the pitch.
Yeah, I think the thing I like most about her from the weekend is just her ability to sit between the lines of the back line, and then her midfield to sort of drop behind it and to be able to get the ball and play forward. I think we see a lot of sort of midfielders who are very safe, and she is that. She's very tidy on the ball, but I think she's not afraid as well to spread the ball wide and to get Arsenal up the pitch, which is something that I was really, really impressed with. And yeah, I think just the control that she brings to that midfield, like her and Kim Little in there, you know, what a duo. I think it allows Arsenal to be very expansive then when they're on the ball, because I don't know if they get pickpocketed once, maybe twice in the game. Just really, really tidy footballers, the pair of them. So I think it's a massive signing for Arsenal. It can't be, you know, you can't actually explain how big of a sign it is for them, because I thought at the weekend she was absolutely unplayable. So yeah, and then when you have the likes of Lisa Baum to release, I think the thing that I was, I suppose, most impressed with was just how, I suppose, Arsenal just wanted to give her the ball all the time. Like every single player was just looking for her the whole time. I think that just shows the impact that she's had already and just how impressive she must be in training or in the pre-season games, because they just wanted her on the ball and they just wanted her to, I suppose, run at that defence. And you see that with the goal. Your WSL debut and you take on three players from well outside the box and fire it into the roof of the net. I think it just shows the confidence is obviously through the roof of her, and I think fair play to come in your first game and do that. But yeah, I thought it was an enjoyable game. Like, I think, to be fair to Brighton, I thought they played really well. I think they looked very dangerous in behind. I really like Kiko Seke. I think we've seen her a good bit the last few seasons, but she is just a nuisance. Like, she was causing Arsenal all sorts of problems in behind, and even defensively as well, getting back. So it was impressive her, and just, I suppose, Brighton were unlucky probably not to catch them out in the break. I know she had maybe one or two in behind that could have done better with, but I don't think Brighton will be too disheartened with their performance either.
No, I don't think so. I think they did put up a good challenge to Arsenal, and as I say, it was just kind of that moment of brilliance from Baum to take it on and to actually get the goal that made the difference in the end. Okay, well, we'll stick with London and we'll go to your favourite team of the season, Scarlett, and Tottenham easing to a win over West Ham in their opening game 3-1, and it was 3-0 for most of the game. Say getting a goal in added time at the very end to put, I don't know if you can really say, put a sheen on the scoreline, but who you counted, Scarlett, as one of the good signings for Spurs this season, Hansen doing what she does best and getting goals. What do you feel about this performance? Did you feel vindication after your prediction?
I was nervous now, leading up to kickoff, I have to say, but no, I think they're really, really good. I think Signe Gopset is one that obviously came in under Martin Ho, and this, I hope, will be her big season. I think you just see she kind of is an everything player. You know, she has a bit of everything, good on the ball, you know, can score goals, can provide assists, and is very physically, you know, present as well. You talk about presence on the pitch for Lisa Baum, she has that as well. She just is so strong and is able to get up and down the pitch too. So really impressed with her. And then obviously my favourite, Kirsty Hansen, my golden boot shirt. Yeah, with two good goals, especially that second one to make it 3-0. A lovely, lovely finish. So yeah, I thought Spurs looked very good, especially that counter-attack sort of when West Ham are putting bodies forward. I thought they caused them a bit of hassle there. But Newcastle, West Ham, they had six new signings and they're starting 11. So it's hard, I suppose, when you're coming in from an off-season and you have so many new faces. I think it'll take a while for them to click, like we're talking about London City. I think it is hard for some teams who have so much change, especially in core positions, then to go out. They obviously lost a lot of defensive players during last season, obviously in the window. So it'll be difficult for them to sort of, I suppose, get that bit of cohesion at the back or that bit of chemistry that they might need. But I thought it was a good performance by Spurs. They'll just be disappointed, I'd say, not to get the clean sheet at the end.
Yeah, Karen, you look at this this West Ham side, and I think they lost something like 6 of their opening games last season. Obviously had a difficult season in general. 6 of the squad, as Scarlett was saying there, like, they were all new signings. They've yet to properly, I suppose, have the time. They're not, you know, I suppose with a team like West Ham, maybe if you're signing players of little less experience than bringing in the likes of Patelis or something, you're not expecting the gelling to come as quickly. But it definitely was a great start for Martin Ho's side in terms of what they could potentially do this year, especially when you look at the likes of Manchester United and maybe how they're struggling already.
Yeah, and you look at, you're talking about experience at West Ham, it's going to take them time to gel, whereas Spurs had people with WSL experience coming in off the bench. So the depth in Spurs is much greater than it had been. Like, you had Martinez, obviously former West Ham kind of star, was really the standout player for them for a couple of seasons. Palova, obviously she was highly rated, she was at Arsenal, so you've got players of that calibre coming in. West Ham's is a little bit of a mixed bag, you know, a lot of new players coming in. I didn't think West Ham were terrible, but in those moments for the goals, you know, the coughing off possession, and Spurs were absolutely ruthless on the counter-attack, but things like the tracking of the run for the first Hansen goal, and then someone like Zellum, who does have the experience, not getting close enough for Hansen's second. Now, not to take away from the goal, it was absolutely top bins, it was a piece of world-class play, but those players know to do those things. It's just things clicking and getting the communication right and going back to basics. West Ham, kind of similar to Everton, I would say the same things about them. The playing out from the back had caused them more problems than good in the couple of games. There was features of that last year, particularly with Everton. West Ham fall into that trap a little bit as well. So I think, again, possibly a team that just need to know where they are and start off being super defensive and then see where they can go from there. But there'd be no shame in that, because it feels like they're nearly a newly promoted team with how much change there has been in terms of WSL experience.
So you don't, like, do you think this is a side that will gel as the season goes on, or will they struggle in the same way that they did last season? Like, do you think the signings have been smart enough to help them?
To be honest, I don't know enough about them. I haven't seen enough of the players. I just thought that the goals were kind of mistakes, and they're things that can be tidied up. They fought their way through last season. You know, it was tough at times, so there is resilience, and the coach has experience in that kind of dogfight down the bottom. So I think they can pick up points, but they're kind of an unknown to me at the minute. So it's a watch this space. Too early to tell. They'll obviously go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, it's hard sometimes to judge too much on the first day as well, because like, you can't judge a book, I suppose, by its first page. So I think it'll be interesting to see how we're looking at this maybe after the first 5 games, because I think, as you said, like, it's hard to analyse West Ham so soon. And same with a lot of other teams like Man United, for example. So I think it'll be a lot will show itself in the next maybe 4 or 5 games. We'll be able to tell a lot more maybe of how teams are getting on.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's so many players that we're just seeing for the first time in this league, and then there's others that we're seeing playing in different systems and various different things. So there's still a long way to go. One team that there is a very long way to go, because apparently they need to learn the rules of the game, is Crystal Palace, who sadly, they got a great result against Everton, a 1-0 win after returning back, you know, very happy for themselves. They were all absolutely delighted. And then it turned out after the game that they had used 4 substitute windows rather than the regulated 3, which meant that a 60-second appearance from Kirsty Howitt could either result in some sort of monetary fine or the game being overturned and them losing the points. So it still hasn't been decided what the actual error was. I tried to look into it to see if it said anywhere, but it only gave various different options. I think maybe it depends on the level of the infringement. Obviously, someone coming on for a minute is a bit different than someone playing 30 or 40 minutes. But a disappointing way to start your first game back in the league, Karen.
Yeah, it's just amateur, isn't it? The fact that no one copped it, it's poor, and it's not what we should be talking about after the game, because obviously you get promoted, you are up against it, you know. They had some good spells, but I actually thought Everton were pretty good, and they had some chances. Again, Everton caused themselves problems, but you know, they were in primary possession for a lot of the game. So it was a really, really big result for Crystal Palace. And you could see the celebrations at the end of the game. They were absolutely delighted. So it'd be such a shame if it's going to be a points deduction for them. Because as you know, as a newly promoted team, getting 3 points, really hard to come by. So it would be harsh. Obviously, it's a 94th minute. But again, how it happened is beyond me.
Yeah, well, as you say, there is fault on a lot of different sides there. Obviously, Crystal Palace should have realised, but the match referees should have also realised, you know, there's a few levels before it gets to this point, and it being in the 94th minute, it's not really like they're trying to seek some major advantage there or anything. But as Karen says there, Scarlett, you know, those 3 points for a promoted team can be so, so important in the grand scheme of the league. I know it's expanded this year, so maybe there's a tiny bit less pressure to get the points in every single game in the same way that there has been. But even still, it would have been a massive plus for them going into the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's huge. And I think one thing that's so important in football is momentum. And I think that would give him a big boost going into training now this week, to have those 3 points. It gets the monkey off the back a bit, because if you go 4, 5, 6 games without a win or without any points on the table, you know, things can turn very quickly. Especially when, I suppose, you have that bit of pressure on you, having gone down, straight down, 2 seasons ago. So yeah, I don't know how no one notices this. I don't know whether it's if you'd blame a fourth official for it, maybe. I don't know how.
The onus for me is on the coaching staff. Like, you know the rules, you know. Like,
but even as a player, if you're on the bench and you know you see three stoppages being made, you kind of, or if you see 5 subs going on, you think, oh, that's me. Like, I'm not getting on today or whatever. I just don't understand how no one notices it. And it is, as you said, Karen, it's amateur, and it's really a bad luck. And nearly for the how much of a bad luck it is, maybe they do deserve to have the result overturned. It would be so harsh, because it's a 97th minute sub. I don't even think she touches the ball. So maybe that could be, I think there was something like this in an All-Ireland final maybe 1 or 2 years ago, that there was an extra player on the pitch when in the last minute or so. So
that was,
I really,
club one, Kilmacud.
Oh, the club one. Yeah. So I really don't know what justice this deserves. I think it would be really, really harsh, but it's shocking to me that no one does notice it. I think it's a really bad look for the league, for Crystal Palace, for everyone involved, really. So I think Everton will obviously be looking for it. They could have got something from the game very late on too. I think they had a flurry of chances, so they'll definitely be putting their hand up and will be sending a letter of appeal. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But as a player, as a Crystal Palace player, yeah, things do get around, you'll be fuming.
Yeah, I think it's a weird one, because it is a league match and that's the first match of the season. It's almost like, not that you care less, like, I remember whenever that Kilmacud thing happened and it ended up being that, like, there was no punishment for it, because basically, like, there was just so much back and forth as to what should happen and should the game be given and would it have been a score if that player hadn't been on the pitch. And it was a once-off game and it was a final, and it almost feels like the stakes are a little bit higher in something like that, whereas like the first league game of the season, it's hard to know like this obviously could matter massively at the end of the season, because there's a high chance that both sides could be facing a relegation battle. We don't know that at this stage, but because it was only a minute and because it came at the very end of the game, I do agree that for the stupidity of it, there should be some sort of punishment, but I just don't know what punishment is actually fair.
Yeah, I suppose the flip side to your argument, there's like, okay, the GA one was amateur and it was club level, and you can kind of say, oh, it was a mistake. This is, again, you're pushing the professional league and you're pushing it and you're saying these are the standards. It'd be interesting to see what the punishment is. It'll feel harsh either way because, like you say, these are two teams you'd imagine will be vying for very few points, and to get three right off the bat for Crystal Palace is huge.
Mm. Well, we will wait and see. I assume they'll probably have to release a decision soon enough. So hopefully we'll find out at some stage during the week and at least put a pin in it, because I do. That was the only thing I remember about the GA one, is that it flipping went on for absolutely ages. Yeah. And by the end of that, I think everyone was just like, we don't care what the decision is, just make the decision. Okay, a massive result for Liverpool over Charlton at the weekend. Grace Fisk getting 2 goals, and I'd say there was a bit of a sigh of relief around Liverpoolian quarters that it was a win, but not only that, that it was an emphatic win. Now obviously Charlton are still finding their feet, so it's a sort of team, I suppose, if you're a team low on confidence but you have the WSL history, that you probably want to be facing in the opening weekend just to get your wheels going.
It's a great result for Liverpool. I suppose you're kind of, this is their new era, I would say. Obviously, it was such a slog last season for them. Obviously, they had such a tight squad and stuff like that. Injuries kind of ravaged them as well. So they waited, 13 games, I think, for a win last season to get that monkey off your back straight away. I think Charlton, it's a reality check for Charlton as well. I thought Liverpool completely outplayed them, and I think their signings were really brilliant. I thought Endemann stood out, I thought she was excellent. Fisk obviously been handed the captaincy, and she was played with a huge amount of confidence there. Everything pointed towards things being really positive for Liverpool. They played some really nice football, but it's potentially something to do with the level that Charlton were at there. I thought they were completely outclassed, unfortunately.
Yeah, Scarlett, we did put Gareth Taylor as one of our managers who'd potentially be in trouble at the start of the league, but he showed that he does have a squad there that he can get to play from.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think there mightn't be too much to read into it from a Liverpool point of view, because as Karen said, I think the opposition was really, really poor. I think the way they set up, they tried to sort of keep compact centrally, try to force them out wide, but then Liverpool just ripped them apart. Any sort of overload out there just killed them. And as Karen already mentioned, Endemann really, really stood out. A really, really top-class player that Liverpool got. So I think it is a great result for Liverpool. Obviously, you have Sam Kerr coming back in as well, and then you have Ciara Keaton as the new goalkeeper. So they've made a lot of good signings. So I think it is a great, great result, but Charlton will really, really struggle if that's how they're going to set up every week. Even basics like set plays, I think as a team coming up, you need to be defensively strong. You need to try frustrate teams. And there was just, it was a very weak performance. So obviously it'll take them time to bed in, and maybe in a few games they'll find their feet. But I would definitely say that they're the team to go down this year, unfortunately.
Well, I was going to say, do you think it is a case of just, first weekend, the shock of it all, the shock of the level? And it could be a case of we see them settle a bit more as the season goes on. Like, are there players within that squad that could, I suppose, help drag them up a level or two?
I think it's very hard to see it from that first performance. It did look like a big golfing class at the minute. They got through by playing as a unit, and kind of you kind of ride a wave when your things are going well. To start off on such a low ebb, it's going to be very, very tough for them. Because obviously we know Sophie Whitehouse there actually thought she made some phenomenal saves. She had a double save from Holland that was just incredible. She was very, very busy and yet conceded four goals. And yeah, we don't know if Liverpool are going to be really, really good. They're certainly not going to be at the top three, you would imagine. So there's worse things ahead for Charlton. So it's a daunting task, I think.
They just put that on the dressing room wall. Yeah. There are worse things ahead, lads.
I don't think they'll be booking me as a motivational speaker.
Okay, and last but definitely not least, we had the inevitable Bunny Shaw coming back, doing what she does best for Manchester City. Obviously against a side where, you know, you'll expect tougher opposition to come. But she was just everywhere. She probably should have ended the game with more than two goals. And it looks like she's just continuing on from where she left off last season.
Which is exactly what we wanted. We kind of wanted her to stay and see if City can kind of have that sustained rain at the top, and she was central to that. It meant that they didn't have to go out and spend big. They've probably signed clever, you know, they've got quality everywhere. Beth Mead obviously came on and got an assist from the corner, and I think that'll be her role throughout the season, because Fowler obviously back from injury starting the season, she'll want to run at things. She was very bright as well. Fugino could have had a couple of goals too. So the attacking quality that we saw loads of last season from City, spearheaded by Bunny Shaw, was back with a bang. And yeah, they're where they want to be, I think, in terms of a squad. So it's looking good so far. Obviously, again, very, very early to tell, but more of the same, which is probably what they want.
Yeah, there was a lot to like from that Manchester City side, Scarlett, in terms of what they did on the pitch. And it was interesting as well when you look at the, you know, the experience of this side. I think Lauren Hemp hit her 200th appearance for Manchester City, who is still a relatively young player, you know, that she has already got that many appearances for such a big club. You saw the likes of Beth Mead coming on, playing very well as a new signing, having that experience. Mary Fowler's goal, I think, was the 1,000th goal that Manchester City had signed in their professional era. So it really does feel like quite a settled side compared to previous seasons at the start. Like, we didn't know last season going in that they were going to be as settled as they were, and we saw it develop. But it seems like they are just picking up now from where they finished off, but also have added a few bits of different players in different positions to shore things up for themselves.
Yeah, definitely. I think we spoke about it a lot last year, just their depth in the forward line, and just how much of a headache, I suppose, it must be for Jagrlex every week having to pick a starting front line. And you still have Miedema to come back into that too. So yeah, very strong performance by Man City. Although Birmingham gave them a fright at the start. Yamashita coming out and a bit of a miscommunication there. So you never know, you know, if they go 1-0 up, it could be a different game, I think. Man City, to be fair to them, didn't allow Birmingham to frustrate them too much. I think going in 0-0 at half time, Birmingham would have, I suppose, chopped your hand off for that. But City reacted well, and really early in the second half, you know, got their goal and really settled. Then I think throughout the game looked really, really strong, really composed. And yeah, well worth the win. I think obviously they're going to be they're going to be right up there again this year, defending their title. So
just those couple of moments, you'd be trying to nip in the bud like that. Early one, you said there were Hooter should have squared it to Sarri, and then the goal they conceded, obviously Rose was just maybe a little bit slow, a little bit complacent because they were so dominant in the game. But that's really picking holes.
Yeah, it's nitpicking, isn't it? So mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what we love to do.
Just what we're
that's
here
why
for.
We get the full 45-50 minute podcast every week is by nitpicking teams like Manchester City and some of the best players in the world. So does anyone have any, after all the predictions that we made, and I know it's only the first week, so again, we're all putting a massive asterisk. So is there anything that anyone wants to massively roll back, or are we sticking to our guns for now?
I think I said that West Ham might be okay, did I? Let's not roll back the tapes. We'll see. Yeah. No. I think we're okay so far. There was only one out there, good. One anyway. So Scarlett's the one. I was
so far so good.
I look forward to the fact we're going to go back to this every single week now for the rest of the season. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, guys. Pleasure as always to be back talking about some football at the start of the season. The Coigig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cambry, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you all again next week.
The Coigig Pod on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.